Empower Radio presents The Farkas Files, an exploration of energy, metaphysics, and the paranormal with David Franklin Farkas. The Farkas Files. The truth is in here, somewhere. Here's your host, David Franklin Farkas.
Hey, great to be back. Thanks to all of you who have sent me good wishes through the whole surgery process. I'm feeling much better. Can't say I'm feeling like this is the best thing I ever did, but they tell me within a week or so I will be feeling that way. My guest this evening is Diane Brandon, who I have been talking with on Facebook for quite some time, and I'm really looking forward to talking to her on the show. So we'll get together with Diane in just a minute, but first, tonight's metaphysical musing, which, as you might imagine, since my life has been wrapped up in this little adventure of the surgery, is coming out of the understandings I've gotten through that process. And part of that is, no matter how much anybody tells you about what something is going to be like, you don't really know until you've lived through it. So the morning after my hip replacement surgery, I was thinking, what did I let them do to myself? They told me we would be up and walking the next day and in physical therapy. They didn't tell me how much it was going to hurt or how much work it was going to take. And the truth is, it has progressed very, very quickly. And I know that within the next week or 2 weeks, I will be moving around on my own and really will be saying, this is the best thing I ever did for myself. But in the middle of it, not so much. It was hard. And most things in life, and especially most things on the spiritual path, are a lot like that. You know, people say, well, what's it like? And I want to do this, and I want to do what you did and what you've done. And can you tell me about it? And the truth is, the answer is no, I can't. There are experiences that cannot be explained. There are experiences that are wonderful, and there are experiences that are scary. And even after you've had them, you don't always understand what they mean or how they'll integrate in your life for quite a while. One of my teachers had this incredibly annoying habit at the time. I totally understand why he did it now. We do some off-the-charge thing. If I mentioned to you what we did, you would sit there with your jaw dropped and wouldn't have any way to respond. And then, you know, get back in his Volvo to go back to his place so I could pick up my truck. And I'd be sitting there going, but did you see this? And was it like, and what did that mean? You know, I'm just jabbering away and he's just driving the car. And when I stopped talking, he looked at me and went, what's the difference? What you had was an experience, and what you'll learn from it and take away from it is what integrates from that experience. If we talk about it, it'll be up in your head and it won't have any value to you at all. He also taught me that he used to ask, how many times does something have to happen in your presence or to you before you believe it's possible? When the answer is one, then you really get how this stuff works. You have the experience, and then you know that's a possible experience and that the universe is different than you thought it was. But if you have to keep having the experience over and over and over and over and over and over and over before you convince yourself that this seemingly impossible thing is possible, you haven't quite gotten to the point where you're paying attention. And in a similar way, he said, how many times will it take for you to do something that you thought was impossible before you realize that it's totally possible and you don't have to do it over and over and over and over and over again to know that it can be done and it can be done by you and it will have the results that you have seen in the past. So in many ways, I'm this whole process of the surgery and healing and the wonderful love of friends and family who have stepped in to take care of me. And all of that is just another reminder of how miraculous all of this is and how we don't really understand what's going on until we're in the middle of it. And then we find out we actually can rise to the challenges and things do move in ways that we don't understand. So I'm very grateful to all my friends who have helped me out in the last 2 weeks and will help me in the next couple of weeks, and to everybody that made my whole experience so wonderful, although it did hurt a lot. So that's this evening's metaphysical music, and I'd like to introduce my guest, Diane Brandon, who is an intuitive and teaches intuition. So I'm very curious to hear more about her experience and her path. You with us, Diane?
I am right here, David.
So good to finally meet you. We've been talking on Facebook for what seems like forever.
Yes, it's nice to hear your voice.
Nice to hear your voice finally.
You're real.
Yeah, well, some people debate that, but indeed I have a voice.
Yes, indeed. And I'm glad you're doing well.
Thank you. Thank you. You've been very supportive through the whole process, and I really appreciate that. So tell me, you know, you're teaching intuition in a corporate environment and in other settings where, for example, what we used to call the P word, saying that you're psychic, would send people screaming for the hills with their either looking up at the ceiling or hairy eyeballs, you know, who are you and what are you doing? And at some point, there was a real transition, partly because of the work of people like you, where intuition became a buzzword and people wanted to find out about this. It became an important part of executives learning how to be better executives. So I know you have your childhood path and, you know, your professional path and all of this. So I'd like to hear more about that, but also how you managed to find your niche in the corporate world with all of this.
Well, to be honest with you, David, the bulk of my work is with people who are metaphysically oriented.
Mm-hmm.
The corporate piece has been quite minor. You know, my background, I guess I have a strange background because I didn't have to learn how to be spiritual. I was spiritual from the time I was born because I still remember what I thought when I was born. But I also had a very strong academic background. So, I've got a foot in both worlds.
Right.
And for me, you know, the spirituality was always there. I was always into metaphysics. I was fascinated by what I called psychic phenomena, which was the term, you know, I kind of grew up with. Intuition came out of left field for me because, I mean, in grad school, I had tarot cards, I had I Ching, but I never weaned myself from them. And so when I started working with my intuition, and it's almost 19 years ago now, it really came out of left field. And I struggled with that because it wasn't part of my self-definition. You know, mm-hmm. I had pursued performing, acting, and singing. And I knew I was that, and I knew, you know, that I had the strong academic background, but other people were intuitive or psychic. And so when I started working with mine, I struggled with the self-definition, and I was just driven to understand what this thing was that I thought everybody else had, not everybody else, but so many other people had, and I didn't have. And that's what drove me to start researching it as a phenomenon, and that's kind of how I was led to do, you know, some corporate seminars. And, you know, I think when you're dealing with people who are not overtly metaphysically oriented or spiritual, my sense is it's important to change your vocabulary and use words that are more, I guess, everyday. And also use a cognitive approach. Try to explain what it is. And when you do that, it takes the sting out of it. You know, you try to bring it down to earth. You present it as a, you know, a real-life faculty. And I think people are really surprised. I've been teaching intuition since, I think, 1996 was the first workshop I gave on it.
Oh.
And those are mainly, you know, it's mainly been to people who are metaphysically oriented. But to see the light go on, when people walk in, they like to, you know, tap into their intuition, but to see the light go on when they're just totally surprised by their ability to get information. I know I'm rambling on.
No. You know, part of what I love to do on this show is to get people talking about the experience that they've had and the challenges and how convoluted it all is. It's all about rambling. So don't apologize. You know, people, we grow up with this idea that life is linear, and there's absolutely no evidence for that at all. Life is circular and always coming back on itself and coming up with new curves. But that linear part of the mind creates these linear life paths.
Yeah, and just like with different lifetimes, people think it's linear.
Right. And so the fact that everyone we know has had these really convoluted life experiences still doesn't seem to overwhelm the fact that we've been told it's supposed to be linear, and linear is nonsense. There are no straight lines in nature. They just don't exist.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So by all means, ramble.
Well, you know, it's interesting because, as I mentioned, I just have always been spiritually oriented. I've never felt 100% comfortable being here, you know, mm-hmm. from the time I was born. So I was always more comfortable as an adult with my friends who were the artists, because I was a performer, with, you know, the intellectuals, because I'm into ideas, and a lot less so with the more mainstream. So it's just ironic, you know, that I've done some corporate seminars. But I really feel, David, that there is a way to frame this so that people can grasp it, and so that it's not too out there or woo-woo or ethereal.
Right.
And once they tap into it, you know, things happen. Now, I will say this. You know, I think different people get information in different ways. The method that I use, which I just spontaneously found myself doing when I started working with my intuition, and it's the method that I teach, is what I call tuning in. You know, anybody can have intuitive information come to them spontaneously, but there's a big difference between that and learning how to access it on demand.
Right.
You know, so that's the method I use. That's the method I teach. It allows one to access information on demand. And again, it's watching the light bulb go off. Now, one thing that's shifted for me in the past approximately 8 months, I moved back to North Carolina to the Research Triangle last November. I had lived here for 30 years before I was in Memphis for 8 years. I moved there to be closer to my parents. And when I moved back here, I noticed that I did sessions for about six different people I had never read for before, first-time sessions, each of whom was deeply, deeply spiritual, deeply spiritual. And when you tap into somebody's essence, you know, who's deeply spiritual, I mean, you just feel it. And each of them I knew was going to be working professionally with their intuition. So the light bulb went off, and I realized that I was supposed to not just be teaching people, but to start mentoring people. And I taught a workshop, you know, a couple of them were in this workshop I taught in May. And usually when I teach intuition, it's an all-day workshop. By the end of the day, I'm trying to get people to be able to do some advanced exercises. As you know, one of the most difficult things to do when you're working with your intuition is to bypass your personal stuff, to bypass mm-hmm. your fears, your wants, anything you've read. So there are a couple of really advanced exercises I do towards the end of the day. I get people to read themselves. And I also to objectify themselves and read themselves with something they're personally attached to. Right. And I also have them tune in and get information on a world, whether it's a national issue or international issue. You know, I just have people pull slips with different things written on them. And this group, I was amazed, was effortlessly able to do those exercises. So a part of me feels that, as you know, we're all shifting, awareness is shifting, intelligence is shifting, and for whatever reason, you know, I think that people who are on the verge of learning to tap into their intuition or have their awareness shift, I think now people have to do it much more quickly than those of us who may have gotten into it years ago, because we don't have the luxury of time anymore.
Right. And most people are having intuitive experiences all the time, but they don't have a context and a language or an awareness for it.
Amen.
So you know, especially for people that get their information as a thought, they don't mm-hmm. see it, they don't hear it, it just drops into their head.
Mm-hmm.
Someone who's not thinking in intuitive terms goes, that was weird, and goes on about their life. Someone who is thinking in those terms goes, oh, that was interesting. What's that about? Tell me more. It's a whole series of questions you learn to automatically ask to draw in more information from this seemingly random piece of information. For each of the senses, no matter how people are getting it, there's a questioning process. And one of those questions, I don't know if this comes up in your training, but I'd be surprised if it doesn't. Lots of people who are becoming more intuitive are also empaths.
Mm.
So they're feeling the emotions of the people around them, frequently the emotions on the planet. I had one friend used to call me up just distraught, just like, I don't know what's going on. I'm totally freaked out. And about the fourth time she did it, I said, have you checked CNN? Because for her, anytime a large number of women and their children were being threatened or dying, she just went into an incredible, overwhelming motherly reaction of grief.
Mm-hmm.
And it could be anywhere
mm-hmm.
for any reason. But after we figured that out, she knew, oh, is this mine? Oh, it's not mine. So where's it coming from? What's going on? But she didn't know to ask that question, is this mine?
Yes, yes, and I think you're tapping into something that's really, really important, David. The first is, you know, I think, well, and I'm not the only person to say this, you know, there are certain markers for being more naturally intuitive or having your intuition closer to the surface, and mm-hmm. those include being sensitive, being artistic or creative. There's a long list. Basically, if you are sensitive, if you are creative, you tend to have thinner boundaries. So you're going to be picking up on things more than people who don't have those thin boundaries. However, in addition, once you start developing your intuition, your boundaries become thinner too.
Right.
Because intuition is a receptive faculty. It's receiving information. So you pay attention to what's coming into you more, I think, as you develop your intuition. But that's such a wonderful point. And if you don't pay attention to ask yourself, is this mine or not? Right. You know, where's it coming from? You might be in deep doo-doo.
Exactly. I think a lot of people who have overwhelming psychological problems are trying to process things that aren't theirs. They're mm-hmm. processing for loved ones, their family, the planet, whatever it is, and they typically, the psychological and medical community don't think that way,
mm-hmm.
And don't give them any sense of, you know, is this really yours? Is this anxiety, whatever's going on, really yours, or is it coming from somewhere completely other than you? And that's actually seen as, you know, being psychotic, depending on how you position that.
It's funny that you say that, because a woman who, I guess if I had a spiritual teacher at all, it would be a woman in the triangle, Tamiko Smith, who is, of all the sensitives, she calls herself a sensitive, all the sensitives, intuitive, psychics, whatever terminology one wants to use, that I have known over the years, she's the most spiritually advanced. And she had these mastermind groups starting in the late 80s. And I remember, you know, she said one day, you know, that she loved to go up to people on the street and talk to them, especially if they were, you know, there was a mental issue, you know, mm-hmm. schizophrenic or whatever, she said, because she knew that they were closer, you know, they were innately spiritual, and she would hear some truth from them.
Yep.
You know,
yeah,
so...
Well, we could have a long conversation about the mentally ill and what kind of stuff they're tapping into.
Mm-hmm.
I worked on locked psych units several times, and one of them was while I was apprenticing with two shamans. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's kind of strange when you can see who the voices are that they're talking to.
Oh, yeah.
And what those relationships are. But once you know that, it puts the whole context of what's crazy, what's not, what's functional and what's not.
What's real.
Right, right. And there are people that are tapping into some very dark, evil energy, and that's basically, you know, eating them alive. And those people are very different from the folks that just have these benign conversations with stuff that most people don't see. So it was very interesting sorting some of that stuff out.
Yeah, you know, when you just mentioned that, I have known some people over the years who have been concerned about things getting to them. Mm-hmm. And I actually knew somebody who felt that she had been invaded by negative space entities. And so I've kind of chewed on that over the years because I've never experienced anything like that. And I think, and I could be wrong on this, but my idea, David, is that if we innately, inherently, on a deep level, feel protected, if we feel that this is a benevolent universe, if we feel a connection to divine, whatever term one wants to use, my sense is that it may be more people who experience more of the negative things out there or beings out there. I almost feel like there may, the entryway is a fear, you know, as being more fear-based.
That, in a very basic way, that's true. But that frequently was caused by early childhood abuse.
Oh, yes.
And the energy patterns and the energetic damage that was caused at that point, the habits of how to use their energy that they learned to survive. Mm-hmm. And then later there's something else that happens that, you know, feels it might be described as an attack or whatever it is. But they use to their disadvantage the fact that there is this predisposition, this original damage.
Yeah, the original entryway.
Right. And that's without some help, without a healer that knows what they're doing with that, that can be really overwhelming very quickly and somebody can get in. And a lot, since what I do mostly is clearing work, whether it's on people or buildings or businesses or any number of things, I see this a lot. Mm-hmm. So people that are very spiritual have a very high energy level, but at some point had a vulnerability that happened, are both really delicious energy for someone to tap into.
Yeah.
But at the same time, there's a big opening to it. And all you have to do is feed whatever the fear was or whatever caused, you know, whatever was that original damage. Mm-hmm. And you got a way in. Mm-hmm. You know, so it's, yes, in a perfect universe, the spiritual immune system would all be intact and nobody would have had those problems. But lots of people have those issues.
Well, isn't it typically the more sensitive who become the victims? Because the perpetrators seek out the more sensitive, the more vulnerable?
That may be, and we could get into a very interesting conversation about choice and, you know, who all the different levels of choice within the family structure.
Yes. You know. Yeah, so and the other levels of choice, too, yes.
Right, right. So,
yes, yes.
I want to hold this thought because we're going to go to break. Right after the break, I'm going to give out the call-in number. I hope we've got some folks out there who will add to our conversation because we can go in a lot of directions with this. This is great fun for me. And so we'll be back in a few minutes on the Farkas Files here on Empower Radio with Diane Brandon. Stay with us.
Have you ever lost a cat? And have you ever wanted to get your cat back after you lost it? Hi there, I'm Andrew Hoffman. I went on this website called InventNow.org. Then I decided to make an invention of my own. It's called the Lost Cat Magnet Invention. So you can get your cat back after you lost it. Just turn it on and lost cats stick to it. That's a good cat. If your cat was hiding up in a tree, it won't be up a tree anymore. It will be stuck to the lost cat magnet. And sometimes they fly toward you in the air. Just listen to one satisfied cat. See, that's proof. You should go to the InventNow.org website, too. But just remember one thing. Don't do a lost cat magnet.
Anything's possible. Keep thinking. Get started on your own inventions or just play some games at InventNow.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office, the National Inventors Hall of Fame Foundation, and the Ad Council.
Sassy!
This week's episode, Danger at the Old Well.
Last one to the old well's a rotten egg.
Ha-ha, I win. Whoa! Ah!
Sassy! Johnny fell down the well.
I'm wet.
What, Sassy? You know where Mr. Gunderson keeps his rope? Go get it, girl. What? You'd rather use this time to set people straight about shelter pet adoption?
I'm cold.
People shouldn't be afraid to adopt from a shelter? Because shelter pets are screened for sound health and temperament?
I'm wet and cold!
Sassy, what about Johnny? What? Let Johnny sit in the well until he learns to be more self-reliant? Sassy!
What'd he say?
Sassy is brought to you by the Ad Council and the ShelterPetProject.org.
Ranger
Remember,
Station, Ranger
adopt.
Yeah, hi. I'd like to report a bear sighting.
Location?
In the woods, just outside of town.
Oh, not surprising. You've got your home. Bears have theirs.
Yeah, but see, this wasn't just any bear. This bear was wearing jeans and a hat, as in a Smokey Bear.
Jeans and a hat. That's definitely Smokey. What exactly did he have to say?
Well, we were about to head home, you know, after having a bonfire.
Oh, I can guess where this is going.
Right, right. See, Smokey told me the fire wasn't actually out. He said if it's too hot to touch, it's too hot to leave.
That's true. Did you know that 9 out of 10 wildfires are caused by humans? That means 9 out of 10 wildfires can be prevented.
Wow, no kidding?
I'm a forest ranger. We never kid.
Sorry.
That was a joke.
Oh.
Get your Smokey on. If you see someone in danger of starting a wildfire, step in and make a difference, because 9 out of 10 wildfires are caused by humans. Brought to you by Smokey Bear, the U.S. Forest Service, your state forester, and the Ad Council. Learn more at SmokeyBear.com.
Now back to the Farkas Files with David Franklin Farkas on Empower Radio.
And I'm here with Diane Brandon discussing intuition. And before we continue our wonderfully rambling conversation, I want to give the call-in number so people can call in and be part of the conversation. That number is 248-809-3474. 248-809-3474. 3474. Call us. We'll have fun. So, where were we? When last seen, where was this conversation?
Rambling all over the place. But, you know, you mentioned one thing, David, and it sparked a thought. And I was going to mention it, but, of course, I digressed. And that is that, you know, I think one of the problems for some people, or perhaps a lot of people, in realizing that they're intuitive or in tapping into their own intuition is that I think we generally tend to feel that it happens a certain way or works a certain way. I know that was true for me. I thought that if one was psychic, and I don't like the P word,
right,
but that if one was psychic, you know, you got this information that was just really striking and it was obvious and it was straightforward. And of course, you know, for me, it doesn't work that way. And I have learned, too, in teaching intuition over the years, that is a block for some people. Because intuition is so highly individualistic. It will express itself differently from one person to the next. It will, even the type of information, you know, that people get will vary from one person to the next. So I always like to tell people, try not to think that if it works such and such a way for your friend, whom you consider to be really intuitive, try not to feel that it has to work that way for you. You
right.
know, really go by how it's speaking to you, how it's expressing itself to you, and build on that, because there's incredible variability. I'm always amazed.
Right, and even for somebody who's experienced, if you're open to new ways of getting information or new kinds of information, sometimes it's startling how a completely new way of looking at things will show up. I remember the first time somebody asked me to, as they put it, check out a house they wanted to sell. And I said, you know, I haven't tried this before, but let me see what I get. And it's not usually my focus in the work that I do to just basically do a home inspection, although I've done them in the real world. So, you know, I have a sense of going through a building and doing that. And originally I was doing them over the phone with people and they were taking the notes. And then I just started taking notes on it. And I was getting lots of detail. I was just amazed at how much detail there was. And on one level, it's not like a person where they block out information that they don't want you to get. The building is just what it is. And if you can tap into it, you get information. But I was getting information about the physical systems of the building, where there were hidden cracks in the foundation, all kinds of really strange things. And I had never done it before, so I had no idea how accurate it was. But I gave her a list for each of the properties and said, give this to your home inspector and tell me what we get. And she sent me the photographs from the very freaked out home inspectors. How did you possibly know? You know, and it was things like shine your flashlight from this corner where you have a window in the basement over towards that side of the foundation. You won't see it from the outside, but there's a crack there somewhere. You know, somebody had built a deck over it to hide it. You know, all kinds of things. Found, you know, legal problems in the deal and sorted other stuff, which was just a matter of being open to it and saying, okay, I'm getting this information. What does it mean? Creating, I like calling it a user interface, because anyone who's done anything using a computer or a video game has that sense of we've got the mouse and things change on screen and we click on things or use the controller, and this artificial environment within the computer responds to it. We have the user interface. In your car, it's the steering wheel and the shift lever and your interaction through the windshield. And if you get good at it, you don't hit stuff. And, you know, if you're not so good at it, you have accidents. But it's a way of interacting with that world. And I'm always asking, okay, what's the user interface for this process? You know, how can I make this work? How can I get the information? How can I shift things? Where do I need to focus? What are you trying to tell me here? The questions change as you go along. And that's a whole different set of skills where you're expanding your skill set as on the fly by asking the right questions and just being open to the information coming in without having any idea whether it's accurate at that point. And over time, when you do it more and more, you realize, oh, I'm pretty good at this stuff.
Well,
I can be pretty
sure. The confirmation is really important. And I totally agree with you, because, you know, you can get into a trap of thinking, oh, well, my intuition works this way, so I don't get that.
Right.
And you know, I've been surprised by the forms, you know, because most of my information, if I'm reading somebody's essence, and by essence I mean who the person is on the deepest level in this lifetime, uniquely that person, underneath anything layered on top that's not who the person is, which I had never theorized before I started doing this work.
Right.
But I kinesthetically feel their energy.
Right.
But I also receive information. A lot of mine is an impression, which, as you know, is, you know, will drive you mad because you're trying to get it in closer to figure out exactly what it is. But I never know if I'm going to get a word or a phrase, if I'm going to get a color or an image or even a feeling in my body.
Right.
You know, so that's a really important point. You want to figure out how yours works, but you don't want to, that shouldn't be graven in stone. You want to be open to whatever you get. And sometimes, I know in a session with somebody, if something comes in and it's not making sense to me, you know, or it doesn't feel like it's in the context of what I'm saying at the time, I will push it over to the side. But if it keeps coming in, then I mention it, and it usually has some sort of meaning. So, you know, sometimes we will censor our own information. But, you know, it's a fascinating thing. It's a whole big ball of wax.
Right. The other thing is I talk about the intuition as expanded senses, because they're really expansions of the physical senses. So there are some people who have expanded vision, some people have expanded hearing, some people have expanded cognitive sensibility, some have expanded sense of feelings in their body, and the, you know, clairvoyance, clairaudience, clairsentience. There are names for all of them.
Mm-hmm.
But for many people, they don't think that the feeling that they have, or the random thought that they have, or something like a color, is a valuable piece of information which can lead to additional information. And so I call it being broadband or being on the AM band. You know, most people walk around like they're listening to a three-transistor AM radio like we had back in the late 60s. And, you know, if you do that now, no matter what's available out there, all you're going to get is country music and talk shows.
Mm-hmm.
And lots of static, and you won't be able to tune it in too well. And then you get a more broadband receiver, and you get the FM band and all different kinds of music, and the police band, and television, and then cell phone calls, and then, you know, it's all different ways of coding electromagnetic information. It was all there, running right through the space that you're in, but you didn't know it was there because you didn't have the right kind of receiver.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, some people are born, I think everybody's born broadband.
Yeah.
And in previous generations, by age 4, it would kind of be socialized out. Oh, that's just your imagination. Oh, mm-hmm. that's your imagination.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think there are any imaginary friends. I think there are just adults that either don't remember or don't experience them anymore. The difference with the new kids, with the Indigo and Crystal kids, is they know what they're seeing. They don't forget. They don't let it go. And they know it's the adult's problem if they can't see it.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And the fascinating thing, too, David, is that science is starting to catch up with some things.
Yep.
I'm sure you know that science has found a physiological basis for gut feelings. You know, it's no longer something that's mysterious. Science has proven that exists.
Right.
And there's even a phrase these days, because they're starting to find out how the body itself perceives information. And of course, I'm sure you're familiar with the research done by Institute of Heart Math. You know, the heart is a perceiving organ,
right.
But there's a phrase now: embodied cognition.
Ooh, I like it.
That's the scientific phrase for parts of the body actually perceiving things.
Cool.
It is so cool.
Yeah, they start to catch up. Some of the things that I've heard that just are mind-boggling. The disease called hydroencephaly, or water on the brain, mm-hmm. forces the brain matter out of position to the point where there's basically no brain material. You know, it's like a slice of bologna on the inside of the skull. And most people that get that disease die.
Mm-hmm.
But some of them are extremely high functioning. And there are a couple of people who have that condition where basically they have no brain, and they're high level physicists.
Mm-hmm.
They're doing as high a level of supposedly brain work as you can do with no brain.
Which is
a pretty good indication that the brain is not where the activity is happening. It's happening outside the brain, and the brain is the physical manifestation of it. It's not the cause or the center of the activity.
Well, actually, there's a I believe he is a psychologist. He is a PhD. I don't think he's an MD, but he also meditates. And
mm-hmm.
there is this raging debate, as you know, about whether consciousness exists separate from the brain or whether it's a product of the brain. And, of course, most scientists feel that it's a product of the brain. Well, he meditates. So he's either a psychiatrist or a psychologist.
Mm-hmm.
He has a book out called The Mind and the Brain, and he did these experiments. He did brain scans of his OCD patients. Obsessive compulsive disorder patients. Then he came up with this protocol that he taught to them, which was, and of course now I can't remember what the protocol was, but basically it was whenever you start to feel that urge to do whatever the behavior is.
Right.
There was a protocol to stop. I think part of it involved, you know, distracting yourself by doing something else that you really enjoy. So he had them do this for I can't remember how many months. And then he did an after brain scan. And what showed up was that the part of the brain, I can't remember which part it is, that actually is kind of the seat of obsessive compulsive disorder in the brain, had actually changed. So
wow.
He was able to prove that through consciousness, through will, you could change the brain. So, I mean, to me, that he proved that consciousness couldn't affect the brain if it's only a product of it.
Right, right.
Anyway.
Well, there are some other things. I'm going to give out the phone number again in case we have some people that have just gotten on the line. And that number is 248-809-3474. 248-809-3474. Give us a call. Ask us some probing questions and take this conversation into an even more interesting spin. That's what I get the feeling we could just keep going.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, this whole the whole question of whether consciousness exists beforehand, it comes up in a lot of things for me. As someone who does shamanic work, I know that historically all over this planet, in every indigenous culture, in every great culture, there have been people doing exactly this kind of work, coming up with a description of the same phenomena mm-hmm. with very slightly different cultural twists to it. And using very similar techniques. So some of this stuff goes back 9,000 years in various kind of recorded history, but certainly the last 6,000 years with a lot of documentation. In spite of all that evidence and continuing evidence now all the time and the science that's being done, the scientific community looks at it and says, well, no, that's not worthy of scientific curiosity. I'm like, what do you mean? It's the best data you've got. And it's consistent anecdotal data is the basis of all science.
Of course it is.
It's where you get your questions. It's how you learn to start doing empirical studies so that you can form the question for an experiment, which you won't be able to do till you have the measuring device.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, Einstein's work started with what he called a thought experiment. And he was 16 years old. And I'm going to guess that he probably had it while he was playing violin. And went into a nonlinear state.
Mm-hmm.
And he asked the question, if I was sitting on a beam of light, what would I see? And he had a vision of what that experience would be like. And then he came back and he started applying scientific principles and he started doing the math.
Mm-hmm.
But
he was whole brain.
Right. Right, but it started out with this very – and he always said imagination is more important than knowledge.
Yes.
So it started out with a question and with an internal process tapping into something much larger than his internal process, mm-hmm. from which he then used the scientific method. And, you know, his work is from 100 years ago. Most people haven't caught up with it. But it took, I think, 20 or 30 years before they could do the hard science that confirmed a lot of it.
Oh, yes.
Experiments were so difficult.
Well, what he also speaks to is allowing yourself to get out of the box of your culture, of the way you should be using your mind.
Right.
So that you can explore. And I could go off on a tangent with that.
But it's fascinating to me when the scientific community comes up with the idea that at some point, and we don't know what it is, when an object, a system, a biological organism becomes complicated enough that consciousness arises.
Mm.
Not that consciousness arises, manifests itself through the complexity of the organism, and we notice it at that level of complexity.
Yes. I mean, and science is finally starting to acknowledge that some non-humans on this planet might have awareness. Imagine
right.
that.
Right. Right. But it's, you know, it's so overwhelming to have the concept that consciousness exists by itself and matter is not the source of everything, that matter is important. One of the guys who was prominent in teaching remote viewing has this wonderful explanation of how much matter there is in the universe.
Is that McMonagall?
I think so. I forget which one I was reading at the time. He said, if you blow up a single atom to the size of a football stadium, 60,000-seat football stadium, take a guess how much matter there is in the nucleus of that atom. How big would it be?
A pinpoint?
Only slightly larger. It's the size of a small pea.
Ah.
The electrons would be the size of small grains of sand, and all of it's blinking on and off, and all of it's randomly placed in the stadium. It's not in the middle like the nice, neat drawings that we've always seen.
Yeah,
it's all shifting, and there's nothing here.
Well, no, and some of the energy is not always a particle. It's often energy. Sometimes it behaves as energy. Sometimes it's a particle.
Right. Well, that was when Einstein started looking at what became the idea of photons, that something could be both a waveform and a particle at the same time. Mm-hmm. The original quotation was, it looks in the math as if light is lumpy. Because the formula started not showing up as even vibrations where the frequencies worked out. You know, the formulas were coming up where there were clumps. Hadn't gotten to the point where he was looking at it as discrete particles yet. But then you look even further, and that discrete particle is just a clump of energy. It's just compressed energy. And then you look further, and it's just the relationship between whatever those bits of energy are. The matter is almost irrelevant. It's a, so,
well, I mean, some of us have always known that consciousness preceded.
Right. So the line I love is, I started out with nothing and I still have most of it left.
Well, I love the term Maya, illusion.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, that this three-dimensional reality is Maya. It is illusion. You know, it gives us the illusion that it's solid. But, you know, energy isn't solid. Energy isn't fixed. Consciousness is fluid.
Right.
Consciousness transcends what we call time. Of course, Einstein taught us a bit about that, too.
Right. I like to think of it as a video game.
A video game.
Yeah. You know, it's an artificial environment with really great holographic, solid-seeming interface.
Virtual reality.
Right. And fantastic surround sound that totally makes us think that this is all real. It's like in the movie The Matrix, where Neo is first in the training environment, and Morpheus says, there are rules. Some can be bent, and some can be broken completely. Let us begin. And then it becomes, you know, yeah, you think this is how the world works? Well, try pushing on it some and see whether it's really how the world works.
Well, you know, the wonderful thing is all the opening experiences that people have been having. I mean, if you look at the near-death experience phenomenon, because of the improvements in medical technology, so many more people have had near-death experiences and have had their lives changed as a result. I mean, you know, this reality that they lived in, that they thought was predictable, just became something totally different, you know, when they had a near-death experience.
Right.
That type of experience has really shifted a lot of people's awareness.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Yes.
Absolutely. So, yeah, it always amazes me, since I've been doing this stuff for quite a while, that there are so many people that have no thought in their minds about this stuff at all.
Mm-hmm.
That it's really just this whole way of looking at things. And for a lot of people, it would be totally terrifying, and I understand that. But there are a lot of extremely smart people that are on the edge of all this stuff because they read a lot, they're involved in science, or they're involved in spirituality, but they still don't quite go over to that
edge.
Right. Go over to that edge and look over the edge and go, oh, this is way, way, way bigger and more interesting than anything I have ever thought of.
Or experienced.
Right. And it's, you know, I like the Native American phrase, the great mystery, because that's what it is. You know, we all get little bits and pieces and sort of get more comfortable with the fact that it's way more mysterious and interesting than anything we've ever been told.
You know, I can't imagine. I know people who are afraid of this.
Yep.
And it's so foreign to me, though I will admit this. Years and years and years ago, when I was an undergraduate, there was a book club called Universe Book Club. and they had no physical books. And I can remember if I was reading a book at night, and it was maybe on hauntings, I would get scared at night because there was a lot I still hadn't explored to, or experienced or, you know, to understand. And nowadays, but I know that there are so many people, even the idea of being able to be intuitive or psychic is scary to them. The idea of survival after death is scary to me. That's normal.
Right.
I mean, I just can't imagine. I actually had a family member say that to me recently. You actually believe that? And I said, of course.
Well, obviously we could go on forever, and we should probably have several more conversations on the show, and I hope you're open to that because we're having a great time.
Oh, yeah.
But our time is almost up, and I want to make sure that the audience knows how to contact you and what you offer.
Certainly. So, they can go to my website. The main one is dianebrandon.com, D-I-A-N-E-B-R-A-N-D-O-N, and you'll find my email address, diane@dianebrandon.com. It's the easiest. My phone number is on there. I do integrative intuitive counseling, which is really based upon trying to get people to unfold and find more fulfillment in life and sync themselves up to who they really are. I do individualized guided meditation. I do regression. Boy, do I work with dreams. I've been working with dreams for longer than with my intuition. That's a biggie. And I also do something called natural process healing, which positively simulates the good stuff in a near-death experience. But and I teach. And my new book, Intuition for Thinkers, will be published fall of 2012.
Oh, fantastic. Looking forward to that.
Thank you.
And I want the audience to know that your contact information will be on the Empower Radio site under Farkas Files for this episode, so they can just look in the archives. And the episodes are always available 24/7. If you didn't catch all of it or you want to tell somebody about it, they can listen to any of the shows that we've recorded. So, and for me, you can find out about my work at househealing.com. HOUSEHEALING.com. And maybe the easiest way to describe my work is I'm applying the skills and techniques of indigenous cultures all over the world that have been done for thousands of years to the modern world. So a lot of my focus is on real estate that won't sell just because that was a need that I was trying to fill. But that also might be a house that has strange things going on, or a business that moved into a new location and suddenly things are going totally crazy and the business is crashing. People with unexplainable physical or emotional problems, couples issues, business issues, all kinds of things. It's all the same. From my perspective, distortions that have happened over time or things from another time that are functioning as if they were in present time. And when you clear that stuff up, amazingly enough, all kinds of new things straighten out. So it's exciting work and a lot of fun. So please contact me at househealing.com. And you can also find both of us on Facebook, where we have some very lively conversations about all kinds of things, which have gone into some. It's fascinating because a lot of your Facebook conversations, I disagree with you. And, we have a good time with that. So
we tilt words.
We do have a good time. So we will be back. 3 minutes. We got a couple more minutes than I thought. We can keep talking.
Wow.
Just want to tell people that we will be back next week. And at the moment, it's a mystery guest because I have been so doped up on painkillers that I haven't talked to anybody about being on the show yet. But we will post that on the Empower Radio site. I'll be putting it on Facebook and Twitter, and it will also be on my blog at househealing.com. So I will get that all together in the next day or so. What else? There was something else I wanted to say at the end of the show, but We got totally sidetracked with other things.
which is wonderful, because that's the beauty of having a show like this and being able to just take two people and meld together and have a good time with it. So here we are. This is the Farkas Files. Truth is in here somewhere on Empower Radio. And looking forward to being with you next week. This is David Franklin Farkas. Have a wonderful week.